morning. Go ahead.
Jim Pugh for Sierra Club. Good morning.
Good morning.
This case challenges an attempt by EPA to cut off a clear statutory obligation that the agency has avoided for more than a decade and now wants to get rid of permanently. The action at issue is a determination by EPA that it has satisfied the obligations of Clean Air Act Section 112C6, even though the agency has never even claimed to have set the standards that are undisputedly required by this provision.
I gather from your brief that, at least as you see matters, it's the case that there have been prior rulemakings developing standards for what we now know to be sources within the meaning of C6 that did reference C6 and also rulemakings that did not. Have I got your position on that correctly?
Yes, there are some that didn't reference Section 112C6 at all.
Right.
Some that referenced Section 112C6 but didn't set standards within EPA's own interpretation of C6, and some where EPA did claim to have set standards within its definition of C6.
Tell me about the middle category.
Well, in the middle category, there's a fairly large category where EPA might have referenced Section 112C6, but it didn't set the standards that EPA itself says C6 require. Those would include, and perhaps it would be a good point to start to just say how EPA itself interprets the Act, and that comes from page 40 of its brief.
Wait, before you do that, could you just tell me, just so I completely understand, and we'll come back to that because that's a critical point, but is it petitioner's position that for a source that qualifies for treatment under C6, setting D2 or D4 standards is not sufficient, that there needs to be separate emission standards for the C6 apps?
Well,
is that your argument?
Not exactly.
No, I was hoping you'd say yes, because that's what I thought you were arguing. Not so?
It's not far off. What EPA
is it
says,
close?
And this is a point of agreement, is that EPA at least has to set standards under D2 or D4 for the Section C6 pollutants.
Well, I didn't think they disagreed with you about that. I thought that was the agency's position.
That's right. That's
okay.
We don't disagree.
If you were agreeing, you wouldn't be here today, right?
Well, no. If EPA had set those standards, we wouldn't be here today. But they haven't.
Wait, so you're only arguing that they, for the C6 sources, C6 eligible sources, they haven't even set D2 and D4 standards? That's what your case is about?
No, Your Honor. We're saying that they haven't set D2 or D4 standards for the C6 pollutants that those sources emit, and the agency itself says it has to do that.
But aren't D2 and D4, aren't those MAC standards? Those are technology-based standards, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's why I ask. They have set those for the source.
They have set standards for the source, and we contend that, in fact, D2 does require standards for every hazardous air pollutant that a category emits. That issue is actually teed up for this court in a case that's coming in front of the court next week, the Desert Citizens Gold Mines case.
But do you when you say they haven't set D2 or D4 standards for the C6 pollutants, do you mean that they haven't included an express emission standard for that pollutant?
Our point is that they haven't included an emission standard for that pollutant at all, express or otherwise.
How would you have a non-express emission standard?
They're one of the arguments in EPA's brief is that they have set these standards through surrogates, and that's how they met their obligations under C6.
And you don't object to that, do you, if in fact it's a legitimate surrogate?
That's right. We don't object to setting a legitimate surrogate. Our only point here is that EPA has never claimed to set standards for these pollutants directly or through surrogates.
I'm sorry. Well, but say that again. You lost me at some point in that sentence.
Our point here is that EPA has never claimed from any of these rules that it's relying on. It's never claimed to set standards directly for this pollutant, for these pollutants, and it's never claimed to have set standards for any substance that identified as a surrogate for these pollutants.
I thought in answer to my initial question, you divided up the universe of the prior rulemakings into three. One's purporting to satisfy C6. One's not having anything to do, not at least visibly, having anything to do with C6. And then a sort of intermediate category where you seem to be saying C6 was referenced, but by EPA's own standards, not satisfied.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. You seem now, I misunderstood you completely. You seem now to be saying that in none of these rulemakings did EPA visibly apply C6 standards to the C6 pollutants.
Your Honor, if I said that, I misspoke. There are some rules. For example, the recent revisions to the medical waste incinerators rule and the recent revisions to the hazardous waste combustor rule, where EPA claimed that it was setting standards for the C6 pollutants through surrogates.
Okay.
We're not challenging those rules here.
Okay.
Wait, are you arguing that those rules would not qualify for treatment under C6? Or are they okay?
Well, Your Honor, we're actually challenging those rules in a different case.
But that's not the question I asked you. Are those rules, what did you say they were, medical health waste?
Well, the medical waste incinerators rule and the hazardous waste combustors rule.
Okay, well, do those rules, under your interpretation statute, would they qualify for C6 treatment?
They would qualify for C6 under EPA's interpretation because at least the agency has claimed that it was setting.
Your interpretation?
My interpretation is that no, EPA hasn't actually set valid surrogate standards, and we're going to challenge the validity of the surrogacy claim.
But if the surrogate was legitimate, it would be okay?
Yes, we would agree that that satisfies.
Okay, and now tell me, what's the difference between, say, the combustor standards? What did they do in the combustor standards that they didn't do elsewhere?
In the hazardous waste combustor standard, EPA said, we are setting a standard, an emission standard, for the relevant C6 pollutant, which is polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, through a surrogate.
And what is that standard? Is that an emission standard?
It's an emission standard. I think it's an emission standard for dioxins. And they're claiming that dioxins is the substance that...
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I'm sorry. They're claiming that dioxins is the substance that is a surrogate for PCBs.
And does that standard limit the emissions of that surrogate?
Yes, Your Honor. There's an emission standard on the books, a D2 emission standard on the books for dioxins.
D2 emission standard.
I'm sorry, yes, a section 112 D2 emission max standard for dioxins that is purports at least to be a surrogate for PCBs.
Okay.
So the only issue theoretically open there would be whether the use of a surrogate worked in that case.
In that case, if we ever get to it, Your Honor, that would be the issue, but that's not the issue in this case. From our point of view,
you're okay with surrogates as long as they're a legitimate surrogate. You just think the surrogate or the HAP, I should put it the other way, the C6 HAP or its legitimate surrogate has to have its own emission standard, correct?
That's correct.
And that's your position.
And our position is that EPA, this court could take it, except as true, every statement that EPA has made in all of the rules that it's relying on, and it still wouldn't get to any claim that EPA has ever set standards either directly or through surrogates for sources accounting for 90% of these pollutants, according to the agency's own interpretation.
That's on the aggregate question,
yes,
meeting the 90% requirement. But you concede, I take it, that it may well be the case that certain prior rulemakings with respect to certain sources satisfy its C6 obligation with respect to C6 pollutants.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So if I can come back to EPA's interpretation, because I think it is a central point. At page 40 of its brief, EPA says, provided that EPA has set standards pursuant to sections 112 D2 or D4 or equivalent standards for substances identified as surrogates for the section 112 C6 HAPs. EPA has fully met its obligation to set standards assuring that sources accounting for 90% of the aggregate emissions of the section 112 C6 pollutants at issue are subject to standards.
And you agree with that if the surrogate's legitimate, correct?
Yes. I think that's the point of agreement, Your Honor.
Okay. Now what?
EPA hasn't set those standards. Those standards are either on the books or they're not. And nowhere in the record for this rule has EPA ever claimed to have set those standards.
Now, you said in your brief that, where do you argue in your brief that this is a, you talked about it violating the statute, but I didn't see any, I see you making an arbitrary and capricious argument.
Well,
where's the statutory argument?
Your Honor, EPA has pretty much conceded the statutory argument. I mean, the statutory argument, which we made in our primary brief, was based on the fact that EPA hadn't articulated a statutory interpretation in the rule. There wasn't any interpretation of what EPA thought Section 112 C6 required. The agency said we've done what Section 112 C6 required, but it didn't say what that was or why it thought it had satisfied the requirement. So in our opening brief, we made the argument that if EPA thinks this satisfies the...
The only statutory interpretation, there's no statutory interpretation in the rule, in the notice you're challenging, correct?
Correct.
But there is in the 98 rule.
There is one, and in fact, it's different than the one that EPA is advancing now.
Well, and is it really? Because, that's my point. The agency articulates its interpretation of the statute in the 98 rule. It says, it said, in making sources subject to the standards, Section C6 does not specify either a particular degree of emissions control or a reduction in the pollutants, correct? That's their interpretation of the statute.
But, Your Honor, I don't have it in front of me, but they went beyond that in 1998 and said we don't have to set standards for these categories at all. We can satisfy C6 without setting standards even for the C6 pollutants.
All they have to do is set the standard for the source.
For some standards for the source. It doesn't
correct.
Have it doesn't have
no, but my point is that's where they interpreted this. That's where the agency interpreted the statute.
But
and I didn't see anything in your brief challenging that interpretation. You say several times that the agency's been inconsistent about its position, right?
Well, that's an interpretation of the statute, but since then, EPA has advanced a different interpretation.
Which is what?
Which is the one that they advanced both in their final gold mines rule and in their brief in this court in the gold mines case, and that is that the statute is ambiguous as to whether EPA has to set standards for all of the hazardous air pollutants that these sources emit or just the C6 pollutants, but at a minimum, it requires standards for the C6 pollutants.
Can I, and I'll ask government. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. But it's interesting. The 1998 listing, if we had been challenging that, we would have said, no, the statute requires standards for these, definitely requires standards for these pollutants. And I think that the brief makes clear that, at this point, EPA and Sierra Club agree that there is a minimum requirement to get standards either directly or through surrogates for the Section 112 C6 pollutants that these sources emit.
I just want to ask you a question about your notice and comment argument. And the reason I'm asking is that it seems to me a much simpler route to your ultimate conclusion on notice and comment than the route pursued in your briefs. So maybe I'm completely wrong in thinking that this route was available. Until the determination at issue here, there was no final identification of the sources satisfying, purporting to satisfy, the 90% requirement, so that the determination represents the first final EPA conclusion on that matter, and that really satisfies most of all the standards for a legislative rule.
Yes, Your Honor, we agree with that. And that probably is a simpler route to what we're asking the court to do. We do hope the court reaches the merits because we think that it would help to have a merits decision on this attempt to evade setting standards that EPA itself agrees it has to set. But
speaking for myself anyway, it seems to me that it's a case of mind-boggling complexity, and we don't have a good record before us, which has affected the briefing on both sides, and for us to address the merits would be folly.
Well, I can certainly understand the frustration with the record, because we share it. But I think there is a simple aspect to the merits of this case, and that is that EPA agrees.
That would be very helpful to know.
It's just this. The EPA, yeah. Both parties agree that EPA has, at a minimum, a duty to set standards for the C6 pollutants that these sources, the agency is relying on, emit. And it hasn't set those standards. It hasn't ever claimed to have set those standards. And the court doesn't need to look any further than this very sparse record and the EPA's brief to see that EPA has never even claimed to have set these standards.
Okay.
Thank you.
Wait, I have another question. I totally share my colleague, Judge Williams, wish that we could resolve this on your notice and comment theory, because I, too, find the record and the briefs quite confusing. But let me ask you about the notice and comment theory. In 1998, the agency identified the sources that would qualify or that would be regulated under C6, right?
Yes.
Okay. And it set forth the standard that it would apply then, correct?
Well, ultimately, no, Your Honor. EPA is applying a different standard.
But the notice that you claim requires notice and comment, nothing in that notice changes the standard. It's silent.
Well, right? Your Honor, it necessarily reflects an interpretation of the statute. It doesn't say what the intent.
It doesn't. It says the sources that we identified in 1998 now add up to 90%.
Yes.
I've counted them. They're 90%.
Well, no, Your Honor.
What's the substantive change that the? Now I realize your argument is that the agency has different interpretations in its brief here and elsewhere, like in the gold mine rule, right? But what in the notice made a substantive change in the regulation?
There's notice does two things that are very significant.
Go ahead.
First of all, it eliminates EPA's duty to set standards, undisputed duty to set standards for these pollutants that the agency has never set. So it gets rid of an unmet statutory duty that EPA has never fulfilled, and it deprives the public of the benefit of these standards that the statute requires.
But you didn't answer my question. Do you agree, though, that, I mean, unless it makes a substantive change in the law, right, it doesn't require notice and comment.
I agree with that premise, Your Honor. But
I know one of your answers to my question is it's deprived the public of an opportunity to comment, but that assumes a conclusion. So what's the change? Again, I totally understand your point that the agency's position in various places sounds different than what it said in 1998, but the question before us is what in the notice itself changed that 98 standard? I don't see anything in it that did.
Your Honor, I understand what you're asking. I think that the question is not whether EPA clearly articulated a different interpretation than it did in 1998. I think the question under the court's precedent on when notice and comment required is whether it changed the legal landscape, period.
How did it do that?
It eliminated a statutory duty that EPA had before that determination came out.
Yeah.
Before the determination came out, EPA was subject to a still unmet statutory duty by the agency's own interpretation of the act to set standards for these pollutants that the agency had never claimed to have set before. The whole purpose of this determination is to get out from under that duty, and it does that. It says EPA doesn't have to set these standards after this. We were done, and we don't ever have to set any more standards.
Counsel, can I go back to my earlier question, because an answer you gave to Judge Tatel seemed to me to conflict with the answer you gave to me, and that was in relation to the sources purportedly satisfying the 90%. Now, we're told by EPA, page 12 of its brief, that since the 1998 rule, it has altered the sources that it uses to satisfy the 90% requirement, so that we now have, for the first time, a decision that is final, identifying the C6 sources. And that sounds to me like a very strong change in the legal landscape. Even if it were the case that all the actual rules that they adopted perfectly satisfied C6, apart from the 90% aspect of it. No? I missed something there?
Your Honor, I think I understand your question, you know, perhaps a little differently now. EPA has claimed for the first time ever that it has satisfied section, it has set the standards that section 112C6 requires.
And one part of that is naming what the sources are that count for those purposes.
And that is certainly one part of that. Now, EPA did come up
with... Is that enough for us?
No, it is not enough.
Enough for us to find that you're entitled to notice and comment?
Oh, right. Excuse me. I'm sorry. It is not enough for EPA to do that. The first identification of sources came in the listing in 1998. That list was revised again in 2002, and then finally again, right at this action. So certainly.
Wait, right at this action?
Pardon me?
Did you just say it was revised with this action that you're challenging?
Well, I don't know. It was not in this action, but right in 2011.
But not in this action.
I'm sorry, right.
Did this notice do anything other than, it didn't add new sources, did it, this notice? It just added up the sources that previous regulations said would qualify for C6 treatment and said they now amount to 90%, correct?
It added them up, it said they amount, and it provided this interpretation of the statute,
although
it wasn't explained. We have now satisfied.
Where? In the notice?
In the notice. The last sentence of the notice says, we have satisfied the requirements of Section 112C6.
As set forth in our 98.
No, it doesn't say that.
No, but that's what they're talking about.
Your Honor, I think we would have to guess at that. Since 1998, EPA has articulated other statutory interpretations, including the one in the Municipal Waste Combustor Rule, where EPA insisted that it had no obligation to set standards for these pollutants.
Don't you accomplish the same thing in terms of your interest here in your argument that the agency's positions since 98 have been inconsistent and that it requires a remand for the agency to clarify what its interpretation of the statute in fact is?
Your Honor, EPA...
Doesn't that accomplish exactly the same thing?
Well, I don't think a remand would accomplish exactly the same thing. We believe the vacature needs to be... the determination needs to be vacated. And the reason for that is not just that EPA violated the notice...
Forget that aspect for just a minute. But if the agency is required to clarify what it means about the regulation of sources that qualify for C6 treatment, wouldn't that new regulatory action, by definition, require notice and comment rulemaking?
Yes, Your Honor.
And wouldn't that completely accomplish your objectives?
A vacature for failure to explain the new interpretation?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Yep.
Ms. Fleischer.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Madeline Fleischer. I represent Respondent, the United States Environmental Protection Agency. With me at Council's table is Norman Rave from the Department of Justice and Michael Thrift from EPA. I'd like to focus today on the key threshold jurisdictional issue that Sierra Club has to get past, which is the question of timeliness. Fundamentally, this is a belated collateral attack on previously issued emissions standards and, as Judge Tittle has pointed out, the 1998 112C6 list.
That's not what I said.
Apologies. Well, I did...
You can make your argument, but that's not what I said.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, Your Honor, if I...
Counsel, your brief tells us that since 1998, EPA has changed its identification of the sources. I don't see how you can say that their suit is untimely when apparently after 19... I mean, you have a listing of sources in 1998, and then you shuffle them around, and this, as far as I can make out, is the first final determination of the sources purporting to meet the EPA says meet the 90% requirement.
Well, I think what you have to look at, Judge Williams, is the fact that 112C6 creates requirements for individual source categories. And
right.
So as Congress provided in 112E4 of the Clean Air Act, if you have a challenge as to whether a source category has been properly listed, the place to litigate that is in a challenge to the individual emission standard.
But that's not their argument. Their argument is a challenge to the agency's adding up the regulations for the existing C6 sources and determining that they now add up to 90%.
Respectfully.
And embedded in that argument is that the sources the agency is including in the calculation don't include C6 qualifying regulations. They never could have raised that. There's no place they could have raised that argument except in response to this notice.
There have, in fact, been several places they could have raised that argument. I think the key here is that Section 112C6 creates two separate obligations. One is to list categories and subcategories that are responsible for the 90% of emissions of the 112C6 HAPs. And then there's the obligation.
And that we know was unreviewable. Unreviewable, I take it, until this determination.
We agree that this determination is about that reaching that 90% threshold. But the problem is that Sierra Club's arguments aren't about whether EPA has reached 90%. They're about whether EPA has correctly implemented NACT standards for the listed source categories, which is a question.
Are you saying, I mean, we'll check with Mr. Pugh on rebuttal, that there is no challenge to the satisfaction of the 90% requirement?
I mean, this is where I think it's...
But of course, I mean, well, go ahead.
Well, Sierra Club has, I believe, conceded that they're not saying that EPA should go out and regulate new source categories here to reach the 90%. What they're saying is that the max standards that EPA has issued as required under C6 are themselves inadequate, which is a question about whether you're implementing MACT correctly, which we contend is reviewable in a challenge to the individual emission standard itself, not in a challenge to this separate action, which has a much more narrow scope of whether the categories for which you have issued standards.
I see your point, and I certainly think you're right to the extent that this issue can be raised in an individual rulemaking, in a rulemaking for an individual source. In fact, they're making the argument in quite a few of them, correct?
Correct.
But I don't see why why that precludes them from arguing in this proceeding, which relates to a different statutory requirement with its own obligations and its own deadlines, which is separate from any individual source regulation. I mean, you're certainly right they could raise it there, but I haven't heard from the agency why that precludes them from raising it here in this completely different proceeding involving a different statute with a different obligation.
Two points on
my point. Yeah.
Certainly, yeah. And I do see your point, yeah. And I have two responses on that, Your Honor. Yeah. One is that we think that the argument they're making is inextricably bound up with the question of what's the appropriate max standard for an individual emission standard.
Well, maybe, maybe not. Maybe if they're right about their interpretation of the statute, it wouldn't require a change in the individual source max standard. It would require something in addition, like an emission standard.
Well, I think what 112C6 requires is a standard for the source category, which they don't dispute that standards exist for these source categories. What they're disputing is what should that standard say for particular pollutants.
Right.
And so I think that you have to raise that with respect when EPA issues the standard.
I still haven't heard why.
Why
that's exclusive of raising it here.
And that, I think, takes us to Section 307B1, which provides the 60-day period for raising issues regarding, it, among other things, individual emission standards. And I think for them to make the argument they're making here, they would have to argue that EPA has reopened those issues or there is some ground arising after, which they have not done. They're simply asserting that this notice somehow reopens every single emission standard that EPA has issued over the last 20 years. And I think that this court was clear in Olhato v. Train that that's not the appropriate or even a permissible way to raise such arguments. And I think some of the trouble that we're all having with the record here is the result of Sierra Club failing to follow the mandatory route set out in Olhato for raising this sort of belated argument, which is to present an administrative petition to EPA so that EPA can address the sort of argument that they're raising here, as EPA has, Judge Williams, as you've noted, has done when it has been raised in individual emission standards.
I'm sorry, has done what?
Has addressed how the emission standards comply with its obligations under 112C6.
Well, sometimes and sometimes not, as I understand it.
Right. Where the issue has been properly raised, EPA has addressed it. Sierra Club is simply here trying to make up for the fact that they haven't always raised it or have failed to pursue.
So if I can, we know from the statute the 7C6 chemicals, and you're saying that anyone concerned about those chemicals, seeing a rulemaking underway purporting to satisfy MACT, knew that this was the chance to contest the application of MACT to that particular pollutant and should have acted.
Exactly, Your Honor. I would say that I guess Judge Tatel, when I was discussing the 1998 list previously, that's what I was trying to get to. The 1998 list, if nothing else, provided notice as to the standards that EPA considered to satisfy its obligations under 112C6.
Weren't there some standards that had been that qualify for C6 treatment that were issued prior to 98?
Certainly, Your Honor, and with regard to those, we would argue that that would have been the appropriate time and place for an Olhato-type petition,
They challenged the 98, and didn't we held that their challenge was premature?
I don't believe they challenged on this particular issue, but regardless, the dismissal of the 1998 petition specifically, or the petition review with regard to that list specifically said, under E4 you raised these in the challenges to the individual emission standards. EPA had no obligation to issue this determination. 112C6 requires EPA to publish the list and to publish the standards. If your quibble is with its how it's done those, you have to challenge those. EPA undertook this act.
Those referring to the standards.
Correct.
But not the list, because, and I'm not sure Mr. Pugh would buy into your word quibble.
Well, I think that one is covered by either Section 112E4. Well, I guess Section 112E4, which says if your argument is that EPA has incorrectly listed or not listed a source category, E4 says you do that through a challenge to the individual emission standard. There's no 112C6 doesn't require this sort of determination. So to say that by undertaking it voluntarily, EPA reopened all the previous standards that it had said satisfy its 112C6 obligation, essentially, it creates a new statutory duty for EPA.
Can we address the satisfying the 90% requirement? Is it not correct that until this determination, there was no previous final claim, I have to keep saying that because they did claim it in 98, no previous final claim by EPA, A, that it had met the 90%, and B, with what? With what sources?
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree on that second point. I think the whole point of the listing, which EPA is required to publish, is to put people on notice that these are the sources that will be used for 112C6.
But we know that the listing was unreviewable, and we know that EPA kept changing the list, right?
There were certain minor changes over the years. I will point out that I believe most, if not all, of the standards that Sierra Club specifically takes issue with were on the original 1998 list.
By the way, the subsequent changes, were they done with notice and comment rulemaking?
No. Again, to go back to E4, our view is that the notice and comment rulemaking is provided through the promulgation of the emission standards.
The 98 rule was notice and comment rulemaking, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. And as you pointed out, that basically aired EPA's
view. So they issued that through notice. When they slightly, you said they made slight adjustments in the qualifying sources, correct?
Correct.
Were those done through notice and comment rulemaking?
I will go back and receive correction from my EPA counsel if need be, but I don't believe they were.
Well, are they right there? Your counsel from EPA?
They were not.
No.
They were not.
In any event, they would have been unappealable, EPA? Right?
Does EPA know?
It would have been no more appealable than the 1998 determination itself.
Right.
Correct, but the standards for each of those listed source categories would be appealable, and as we've seen, Sierra Club has...
That may be. I mean, your argument increases my strong feeling that we should, any opinion of ours will void the merits, but it still leaves me thinking that, at least assuming there's some challenge on the sources, the final list of sources, it's a requirement of notice and comment with respect to that, which would at least provide a clearer focus on what we're actually trying to understand with respect to the standards.
Well, I think the problem there is that Sierra Club doesn't appear to challenge the contents of the list itself. They're just saying that the standards are wrong.
No, they're not. They are claiming that sources that EPA has claimed qualify under C6 shouldn't because they haven't set adequate standards for the C6 HAPs. So they're saying, for example, take combustors, for example, hazardous waste combustors. They're not saying hazardous waste combustors shouldn't be on the list. They're saying the hazardous waste combustors that are on the list don't qualify because they don't include sufficiently rigorous standards for the C6 HAPs.
Correct, Your Honor, but I think that fundamentally is an issue about the contents.
We're going in circles on that. I mean, I know you don't want to talk about the merits, or at least you don't want us to get to it. But let me just ask you a question about it. Or Steve, did you have another question about that before
I
go on to the merits? Okay. So I want to ask you about how EPA describes its interpretation of C6 compared to how it described it in the 98 regulation, okay? At page 38 of your brief, you say that EPA has interpreted C6 as imposing a requirement for effective control of the relevant C6 HAP. And then in the gold mine rule, it talks about addressing HAPs, ensuring control, regulation of HAPs. Yet in the 98 rule, it says it's important to recognize that in making sources subject to standards, it does not specify either a particular degree of emission control or a reduction in these specifics. So it seems to me the agency's position now is different than what it was then. The agency now seems to be saying, contrary to 98 when we said we were only going to regulate the source, the agency now seems to be saying it will regulate or control the HAPs. What am I misreading here?
I'm not sure you are misreading it, but I will say that in Sierra Club's reply at page 12, note 2, they specifically disclaim any argument that this case is about a change in EPA's interpretation of 112C6. They say that this is about EPA's application of MAC standards under 112C6 sort of universally, or since it's existed at the beginning of time. They're not here saying our argument is that EPA has changed how it applies this.
Well, okay, set that aside for a minute. Do you think I'm wrong to see some confusion here in terms of what EPA actually, not even confusion, but that EPA's position about C6 has changed since 1998? Let me just finish my sentence. In fact, part of your argument in your brief is when you go through all the individual rulemakings, you say you have in fact set standards for individual HAPs, right? You have done it. Whereas that's completely inconsistent with what the agency said in 98.
I don't think it's inconsistent. Uh-huh. But I guess I'll just come back to the fact that that's a question you can only examine in the context of an individual emission standard.
Okay,
you just can't do it.
I want to set that argument aside, okay? I really do. I mean, mm-hmm. Maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. But if you're wrong, I want to understand your view about the merits.
Okay, Your Honor. Given that this, I don't think this is particularly an issue that has been raised by Sierra Club itself.
Well, they clearly raise it in their blue brief. Maybe they've given it up in the reply brief. But they do argue in their opening brief that the agency has been inconsistent in its interpretation.
If that's the case, then obviously the position we put forward in our brief is how we view 112C6 as to, what the standards have to consist of.
Okay, but just tell me this. Mm-hmm. Is there something I'm misreading in your brief and in the Goldmine rule that would suggest that, in fact, the agency position today isn't any different than it was in 98? I'm
not sure I'm getting that question correctly. If you're asking, are you incorrect in seeing some change? Pardon me.
What I see, the change, to put it in the most simple form, in 98, the agency said, we're going to regulate the sources. Don't have to do anything about the specific HAPs. Now it's saying, we do have to address the HAPs. Ensuring control of the HAPs, regulation of HAPs. That sounds different to me. That sounds closer to Sierra Club's position.
I guess I would view that, Your Honor, as an issue of the interpretation, not of C6, but of 112D2 and D4. Again, whether...
It says, but you're... No, I was quoting from your sentence. Your sentence on 38 says this is an interpretation of C6.
I think that's our construction of Sierra Club's argument. The problem is the 90% notice is simply about whether the standards for the source categories exist, mm-hmm. not whether they're required to contain particular components because of 112C6. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the reason why that wasn't addressed strongly in our brief, because it's outside the scope of the 90% notice. If I may, I'd just like to...
Let me just ask. Are you...
Sorry.
Do you have any more questions?
No.
Okay. Go ahead, if you'd wrap it up.
Okay. Certainly. I guess I'll just conclude by saying that I think it's clear that Sierra Club here is challenging what the MACT standards for the listed source categories have to consist of, which is a question about what should the substance of those emission standards be, which has to be under 307B1, challenged within 60 days of their issuance. Sierra Club has not done so and cannot circumvent that time limitation here. But if that's all, I'll sit down.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Does Mr. Pugh have any time? All right, why don't you take 2 minutes?
I'd just like to make a very quick point on the merits and then address the timeliness argument. On the merits, Section 29 of our brief, we do point out that EPA's inconsistent interpretations and a failure to explain the change in interpretations requires vacature. And contrary to the council statement, page 12 of our reply brief does not withdraw that argument in any way. We simply point out that we brought this case because EPA hadn't met its obligations, not just because its interpretation of the statute had changed.
Are you referring to the footnote that Ms. Fleischer mentioned?
Yes, I'm referring to that footnote. That's not a withdrawal of our argument. It doesn't purport to be a withdrawal of our argument.
Let me try to restate at least part of what I'm getting from the EPA argument, and that is we have a rulemaking set a standard that purports to set a standard under D2 or D4 for a C6 HAP. Why isn't that the end of the matter? I mean, why isn't that a final rule challengeable by someone upset about the application of C6 to a C6 HAP?
Well, there are a couple of answers to that, Your Honor. There are a couple of reasons that's wrong. The first one is that this is a separate duty. This is a separate statutory provision that imposes a separate duty to make sure that all of EPA's standards put together cumulatively discharge the 90% requirement. And that is the EPA's first...
90% requirement relates to the quantity produced by the sources, not any particular achievement in reduction.
Well, not any particular achievement, but by EPA's own lights. As EPA says in its own brief, it does require the agency to assure that those sources are subject to standards for the C6 pollutants.
Right.
And our merits claim is that EPA has never done that. But the point, I think,
let's take a rulemaking on a particular source addressing one of the seven HAPs in question. Right. Although let's suppose, hypothesize there's no mention of C6, but it is picking a standard for that source for that HAP. What?
Well, I think that's a good example. I'd like to go into that, Your Honor. First of all, let's assume, for example, it's the 1992 rule, like the Coke Ovens rule, or a 1994 rule, like the Coke Ovens rule, and doesn't even. I'm sorry, I think Coke Ovens is 1992, and doesn't even mention Section 112C6, which it didn't. Doesn't purport to that.
In my hypothetical, it does mention claim that it's a standard satisfying D2 or D4.
Okay, let's say that it purports to be setting standards that satisfy D2 or D4, but doesn't set standards for the C6 pollutants as EPA says it has to. In 1992, the public could not possibly have guessed that this category was emitting the C6 pollutants in any relevant amount, couldn't have challenged that EPA's failure to have met the 90% or any piece of the 90% requirement through a challenge to that rule because...
I think you've changed my hypothetical.
I'm sorry.
I thought my hypothetical in that the rule explicitly addressed one of the seven C6 HAPs.
Oh, it explicitly said we're setting standards for this pollutant.
Right.
If right.
And people who follow these things know that this pollutant is a C6 pollutant, right?
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor. It's not
well,
just...
this Congress determined the C6 pollutants.
But they might not know it. You know, there are two problems, Your Honor. Even if people knew that it was a C6 pollutant, they wouldn't necessarily know that EPA was going to rely on that rule to meet its 90% requirement.
Well, yes, they would. They'd know that from the 98 rulemaking.
But in this hypothesis, we're talking about a 1994 rule.
1992.
Oh.
1992.
But Ms. Fleischer's response to that is that issue you should have raised when you challenged the 98 rulemaking.
Well, Your Honor, I think that gets...
Maybe you did.
Pardon me?
Maybe you did. I don't know. Did you?
We did file some Ojado petitions, Your Honor. We've tried many ways to get at this issue since, you know, for more than a decade. But I think the getting to the timeliness argument that counsel for EPA is making, there is no dispute that this is a final agency action. It's a reviewable final agency action. EPA says that in its brief, and it represented that to the district court below. This would be the final endpoint to its implementation of Section 112C6. This would be the first time that
anybody's challenging that it's final.
Well,
that's not the question.
They're essentially saying it's reviewable, but there's nothing you can review.
No, they're saying you're wrong on the merits.
Well,
they're saying you should have raised the issue. Sorry, I'm sorry, I said that wrong. They're saying you should have raised the issue in individual.
But this issue has never been, this is a new issue. EPA has never before claimed to have satisfied its Section 112C6 requirements. And whether we raised challenged individual rules or not, we're entitled to review of this decision.
Let me try to ask the question this way. In an individual rulemaking where you set standards for a particular source, like hazardous waste combustors, and we know that's a C6 source, right? You could definitely argue in that case that, and you could make the same argument there that you have here, right? In fact, you have in many of them, haven't you?
Right, Your Honor, we could challenge that rule as having failed to set standards.
Okay, and what's different, I think what the government's saying is what's different about this rule is that the only thing that's different is the quantitative determination that all these sources, that you never could have challenged before. What you could never have challenged before is the agency's judgment that they all add up to 90%.
That's right, Your Honor.
But that's right.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's different from, this is what the agency's, this is what EPA's arguing. That's different from the argument you are making in many individual rulemakings, that the standard the agency set wouldn't qualify for C6 treatment, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Our point is we're not challenging any of those individual rulemakings, and in fact, there's no need to because they don't purport to set the standards. Some of them do, but not enough to meet the 90% requirement, even purport.
But you're not challenging any of them? I thought you were. No?
I'm sorry. In this case.
No. In the individual rulemakings, you're not?
In other cases, for example, we have challenged the hazardous waste combustor rule.
Yeah. On what grounds?
We argued that it had a number of problems. It didn't satisfy the floor requirements. It didn't satisfy D2. It wasn't setting standards for the C6 pollutants.
But there's the argument.
That's right. We could.
You did make the argument.
That argument in that case, but our point is that this is a different argument. Even if you assume that we're wrong on that rule and every other rule that EPA has issued, whether we challenged it or not, EPA still hasn't ever purported to set standards that the agency says it needs to set.
So let me go back. The two things. One was the perhaps simple-minded view that I came into the courtroom with, which was that you were challenging the fact of the final selection of sources that EPA purports to view as satisfying the 90% requirement. And so the first question on that is, are you challenging that?
We're challenging EPA's determination that it has set the standards for the sources that for set enough standards under C6 to meet its requirements under that provision.
So let me pursue that. So suppose, EPA, let's assume EPA does a full notice and comment rulemaking that shows how exactly it gets to the 90% and explains what's in and what's out and so forth. Does that meet any part of your actual claim before us?
If there were a record in which EPA ever made the claim that its lawyers are making, that it has set the standards that Section 112C6 requires, either by setting the standards that C6 requires or by saying, here's how we've done it? Yes. But the agency has never done that.
Okay, but then suppose there's a source, and EPA said in its rulemaking, setting standards for that, and here, look, we're also trying to satisfy C6, and this is the way we're doing it. But it didn't talk about the 90%. From an argument you made just a few seconds ago, it would sound to me as if you would say that you have a new entitlement to challenge that standard because the current determination represents the first time you have ever understood that this rulemaking was intended not only to satisfy C6, but intended to satisfy the 90% aspect of C6.
As I think I understand that question, I think the answer is no, Your Honor. We wouldn't challenge, if EPA had claimed to be setting these standards, we're not claiming that we can get at that decision through this rulemaking.
Okay, so you aren't saying that the final identification of the 90% opens up everything.
No, Your Honor, we're not saying it opens, in fact, we're not saying it opens up anything. All we're saying is that this determination on its face, all by itself, is unlawful and arbitrary. And that's all the relief we're asking the court for, is vacature of this.
Well, you're also asking for notice that it be done with notice and comment, which might produce a record that we could understand.
Yes, Your Honor.
You confuse me with your answer to Judge Williams. You said that if EPA claimed that it had set qualifying C6 standards, you wouldn't be here. Is that right?
Yes, if the situation is a bunch of rules where it had asserted that it had set the qualifying C6 standards.
I'm talking about here, in this case.
Right, we wouldn't.
But suppose in those cases, EPA set C6 standards, and the C6 standards were just MAC standards for the source. Would you be satisfied with that?
Well, no, and neither would EPA. EPA itself says that's not enough.
That's what they say now. That's not what they said in 98.
I don't disagree with that, Your Honor.
Okay. So I still don't understand what EPA could have done that would have satisfied you now, other than in all of the source standards that have been issued that it adds up to 90%, it had included adequate standards as you define them for the C6 apps.
Right. It's not just adequate standards. Our contention is that EPA simply wasn't done with its duty. It hadn't set the standards that it says Section 112C6 requires, so it needed to set more standards.
Do you agree with me that, well, I shouldn't put it that way. If the only thing we have to go on is what they said in 98 about what C6 means, then all of these emission standards are fine, correct? Because they simply set standards for the source. They don't set any standards for the apps.
Right. If they were using that interpretation, we would have a statutory argument.
No, but if that interpretation was correct, you would not have a case here, because presumably all of their individual source standards comply with their 98 interpretation of C6. They regulate the source, not the HAP.
I think I would probably agree with that. I think if all the statute required was to set some kind of standard, any kind of standard.
Now, your theory is, your interpretation of statute is that you have two arguments, as I understand. One is your statutory argument, which I don't see you making in the brief, and the other is that, wait a minute, they've articulated different positions about C6 since then, right? And under your interpretation of the statute, source regulation is not sufficient by itself.
Your Honor, I would agree with that and go a little further. Under their interpretation of the statute, too, source regulation is not sufficient.
Their current interpretation.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm done.
Can I make one more remark? And I think just very simply, EPA's failure to set these standards in the past doesn't stop it from setting these standards now. The statute requires these standards. It doesn't tell EPA how to set the standards. And according to EPA itself, in the deadline suit, the agency wasn't done with this process until the determination came out. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you.